This is the Canadian Taxpayers Federation podcast. We are fighting for lower taxes, less waste, and more accountable government. This is an election special, so this is going to be coming at you pretty fast. My name is Chris Sims. I'm the Alberta Director for the CTF. I'm here with my good friend, Federal Director Franco Terrazano. We have him back out there in Ottawa. Franco, you and I just finished ripping up most of Western Canada, publicizing your book, Axing the Tax, the carbon tax fight here in Canada. And boy, oh boy, the carbon tax is really looming large in this election. You and I wanted to break down, though, the cost for Canadians, how this will affect their affordability. And folks, just straight out of the bat, we're going to focus on the Conservatives and the Liberals here. So we're not going a deep dive through the economic plans of the Green Party, the Bloc, or the NDP. So Franco, where did you want to start here? Do you want to start with the difference in the promised income tax cuts? That was a big one.
Yeah, let's start there. Okay, so number one, cost of living, top of everyone's mind. Because, I mean, people have been struggling to afford the basics of life for years now, right? And it seems like prices still keep going up. So let's talk about affordability. Let's talk about income tax relief. Number one, the best way that the government can make all areas of life more affordable is just to stop taking so much money in the first place, right? Tax cuts, letting Canadians keep more of their hard-earned money. So on income tax cuts, Poilievre is promising twice as much relief as Carney, right? So Carney is promising income tax cuts for a two-income family that will save them about $800 a year. Poilievre's income tax cuts would save that same family up to $1,800 a year. Okay, so Carney promising tax relief for about $800 on income taxes. Poilievre promising income tax cuts for $1,800 for that family. So on income taxes, Poilievre is promising twice as much relief as Carney.
Yeah, that's a big deal. $1,000 extra is $1,000 extra. So that's like about three big trips to the grocery store for a family of four for those weekend grocery shops. So that's a big difference there. So let's move on from income tax cut differences, because that's pretty stark. The big sticky one, of course, here is the carbon tax. We, of course, I think we mumble about this in our sleep. The carbon tax is a huge expense for Canadians.
Yep.
To be fair, Pierre Poilievre campaigned on axing the tax for like 2 years leading up to this election. And then just before the election, current Prime Minister Mark Carney reduced the consumer carbon tax down to zero, which is why you're seeing those savings right now, for now, at the pumps. But there's a big mess here as to who has a hidden industrial carbon tax, how much that's going to cost us. What's the difference here? Let's start with the Conservative plan. What's their plan on the carbon tax?
Well, you know, Pierre Poilievre and the Conservatives, I mean, he's the only federal major party leader that is promising to get rid of all carbon taxes. He's the only one. Yeah. Right. So he'll get rid of the consumer facing carbon tax. He'll repeal the law. He'll get rid of the hidden carbon tax on Canadian businesses, right? Often dubbed the industrial carbon tax. He's going to get rid of that too. And Poilievre is also getting rid of the second carbon tax, right? Folks, you might remember us talking about the fact that Trudeau buried a second carbon tax in fuel regulations that will make your like gasoline and diesel more expensive. Well, Poilievre said he's going to get rid of that too. So Poilievre is very clear. He's on the record many times saying he would get rid of all carbon taxes. Now let's contrast that with Mark Carney and the Liberal Party. Chris, you already kind of teed me up there, but Carney doesn't want to get rid of all carbon taxes. He wants to change the carbon tax, and that was his own word, not mine. So as you mentioned, Chris, Carney set the consumer carbon tax rate to zero. Of course, the legislation is still on the books. So after those politicians are done knock, knock, knocking on your door after the election, they could still technically get back into the House of Commons and crank that carbon tax back up. But Chris, where I see the fight shifting under a Carney-led government is more to the hidden carbon tax, right? Carney has been very clear that he wants to impose massive hidden carbon taxes on Canadian businesses. Then he hopes you won't notice when that makes your life more expensive, right? But, you know, there's another element here of Carney's hidden carbon tax on Canadian businesses. And that's the simple fact that, you know, the United States, Washington, D.C., does not impose a carbon tax. So a Carney carbon tax on Canadian businesses would push our entrepreneurs here in Canada to cut production, to increase production south of the border. So really, Carney's hidden carbon tax on Canadian businesses is the worst of all worlds, right? Higher prices, fewer jobs.
Sorry, Franco, about that. You just said this will result in higher prices and fewer jobs. So I wanted to pause you there real quick. We don't usually play clips in this show, but this one just blew my mind. Okay, so it's been very difficult, to be fair, very difficult for journalists to be able to pin Carney down and make him answer this question. How much will your industrial carbon tax cost? Okay, so what this journalist did, and kudos to them, I don't know who it is, they tried to really pin him down specifically on steel. Okay, and I want folks to listen to this clip. This just got said during a press conference between Carney and the mainstream media. The journalist basically says, hey, this big industrial carbon tax that you're planning here, we've got trade unions, okay, like the pipe workers, saying that this is going to decimate the steel industry and it's going to drive them into the arms of President Donald Trump, like you just said, Franco. Will you give a carve out? Will you give an exemption to the steel industry? Listen to this.
Well, there's a looming trade war with the United States and the industrial carbon tax in place. I'm wondering if in your plans to support Canadian industries, you would consider exempting companies from the industrial carbon tax, particularly like ones like Algoma Steel, which are actively working towards having greener technologies in place in the near future.
So what's happening is that there's a couple things here. One is that there's a value to that industrial carbon tax in the predictability of that tax and the certainty around. It encourages the types of investments that help companies such as Algoma leapfrog their competitors, and leapfrog in many cases their American competitors, but international competitors.
Okay, folks, so you just heard Prime Minister Mark Carney say, oh, you don't understand. My industrial carbon tax will help the steel industry. Franco, that reminded me of when Trudeau said that his carbon tax made people richer?
Yeah. Yeah, I sure do. I mean, that's insane, right? Yeah. Steel workers need a carbon tax like they need a hole in the head. Like, they don't. Like, come on. Carney's also been trying to spin Canadians like, oh, don't worry, folks. It's just going to be the large companies that pay the carbon tax. Like, come on. Here's Carney's problem. Nobody believes him. And you know, the Canadian Taxpayers Federation just released Leger poll that shows that only 9% of Canadians believe Carney, that businesses will pay most of the cost of his carbon tax. 70% of Canadians understand the simple reality that if you impose carbon taxes on businesses, well, you know, those costs are going to be passed on to consumers. And, you know, we've said this many times, but like, come on, folks, a carbon tax is a carbon tax is a carbon tax. That will make your life more expensive, right? When the government imposes carbon taxes on refineries, your gas and diesel gets more expensive. When the government hammers utilities with carbon taxes, your heating bill gets more expensive. Or take a fertilizer plant, for example, right? When the government hammers fertilizer plants with carbon taxes, well, that makes it more expensive for farmers to grow food, and it makes it more expensive for you to buy food. On the carbon tax, the wedge is very clear. Polyev, get rid of all carbon taxes. Carney, supporting carbon taxes and hammering Canadian businesses with carbon taxes, and you with higher prices.
Exactly. I just wanted to slip something in there too, which is connected to carbon taxes. I read Mark Carney's book, especially the chapters on things like carbon taxes. Carbon taxes are a cornerstone, his word, to his worldview. Okay, he believes so fervently in carbon taxes, he thinks they should be all around the world. To that point, separate from his industrial carbon tax, folks, he's going to create carbon tariffs. Okay, mm-hmm. Carbon tariffs. Now, the government calls them border adjustment mechanisms, but that is government talk for a tariff. And this is why. When Carney looks around the world and finds a country that doesn't have a carbon tax, that upsets him. That upsets him so much, he's going to create a brand new carbon tax tariff here in Canada. So if a country without a carbon tax, Franco, sends stuff into our country, if we have an import from that country, he's going to slap a tariff on that thing. And we're going to have to pay more for it. So much so that they actually included it in their costed platform. Folks can go look it up. Take a look at the border adjustment mechanism that is in the Liberal platform. Bottom line, it's going to make stuff cost more here in Canada while Canadians are broke. So yeah, huge difference there between the two parties on their plans for carbon taxes. Let's move on now to home taxes. Franco, I know you did a deeper dive on this than me. What's the difference right now between the two parties going into this federal election on taxes on homes?
Yeah, let me just add some data though first to your point about the carbon tariffs, Carney's carbon tariffs. I mean, according to his own platform, it's going to cost Canadians $500 million. Like, that's his own platform. It'll cost $500 million, right? So that's really expensive. All right, shift gears to the homes, right? Homes are super expensive. And really the difference between Poilievre and Carney on cutting taxes on homes is similar to the income tax, right? So Poilievre is offering more home tax relief than Carney is. So essentially what Carney wants to do is he wants to cut or take the sales tax off of homes for first-time home buyers up to a threshold of $1 million. Okay, Poilievre essentially wants to give more people more relief when they're buying a home. Poilievre will take the sales tax off of all new homes up to the threshold of $1.3 million. So similar like with income taxes, Poilievre is cutting, you know, giving people more tax relief when they buy a home as well. But there's actually another difference here that's really important. So let's talk about home equity taxes, Chris.
Yeah.
Now, our longtime listeners and supporters of the Canadian Taxpayers Federation will know that the Trudeau government, the Liberal government, has been flirting with home equity taxes for quite some time, right? So the federal government spent about $450,000 of our tax dollars studying and promoting home equity taxes. But the biggest thing that the Trudeau government did, which, became closer to imposing a home equity tax here in Canada, is that it brought in a reporting requirement back in 2016. So essentially, when you sell your home, you have to tell the CRA what you made on that home sale. Okay, but the obvious question is like, if the tax man ain't taxing it, well, then why is the tax man asking that question? And the truth of the matter is that reporting requirement from the Trudeau government is the necessary first step for a government to impose a home equity tax. So here's another big difference. Poilievre is not just saying he's against home equity taxes. He's proving it by committing to ending the reporting requirement with the CRA. So look, I haven't heard much from Carney, if at all, anything about home equity taxes. I think he's trying to keep that quiet. But Poilievre is not only saying he's against home equity taxes, he's proving it by saying he would get rid of that home reporting requirement with the CRA.
This is a big one, folks. So as of right now, as most homeowners know, since the 1970s, your primary residence, which is government talk for the house you own and live in, okay, it's your house. When you sell that right now, you don't pay tax on the money you made on that thing, which is a big reason why so many folks count on the sale of their home when they're older in order to fund the remaining years of their lives, okay? Especially for folks who do not have big government pensions to count on. So that's going to be the only money they have for the remaining years of their life. Also, on the other end of the spectrum, if you're trying to get into the housing market as a young couple, imagine having that first starter condo where you're just a couple and you're like, okay, honey, time to have kids. Let's have a backyard so we can maybe have a dog or a swing set or something. When you sell that house, that little condo, imagine getting nailed by the government with another huge tax. That then robs you of extra money that you can put in to that bigger house for your family. So this is just a crazy idea. But I wanted to wade in here on the silence that is speaking volumes from Carney. Okay, so the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, Franco is right. We've been hot on the heels of this risk of a home equity tax now for years. Okay, we've been filing FOIs. Our investigative journalist did a lot of stories on this. Okay, the government, whenever we would put something out saying, hey, we noticed you were meeting, PMO staff were meeting with a big pusher of home equity taxes, they would freak out. They would deny it. They would say no. So much so, Franco, remember that time, I forget which minister it was, it was on a Saturday morning, and they went all crazy online saying, there's nothing to see here. No, 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 we're not doing this. This was on social media when they're supposed to be, you know, kissing babies and having, you know, pancake breakfasts. But Carney hasn't said anything about this. I was expecting the moment this started hitting the news during the election campaign for them to come out with a categorical denial, for them to sign a pledge, something. Nothing. Crickets. So this is causing me serious concern that they are seriously thinking about a home equity tax on the sale of your house. So folks better pay attention to this. Where did we want to go from here from our home taxes? Do you want to move on to the difference between their budgets?
Yeah, let's start there. And okay. And I think this is really bad for Carney's, you know, credibility image. I actually think Carney's budget shreds his credibility. Because, look, I can't believe this is happening. I didn't even know it was possible. But Carney's budget is worse than Trudeau's. Okay, Carney wants to add about $100 billion more debt than even Trudeau was planning to do. And, you know, this really shreds his credibility because Carney's essentially trying to present himself as, like, the credible numbers guy. Well, I don't think you're very credible if your numbers are worse than Trudeau's. So let me just break down what Carney's planning when it comes to budgeting. Over the next 4 years, Carney wants to rack up $225 billion of debt. $225 billion of debt over the next 4 years. Over those same 4 years, Trudeau was expecting to add $131 billion of debt. Okay, so beep, boop, do the math. And Carney wants to add about $100 billion of more debt than Trudeau. Okay, so it is bad. Carney has absolutely zero plan to balance the budget. Okay, Carney has been spinning people about, oh, you know, we'll balance the operating budget, blah, blah, blah. But folks, if you just look at the numbers, the debt goes up by tens of billions of dollars every single year. Carney is not balancing any budget. He has no plans to balance the budget. He wants to add another $225 billion of debt. And you know what, folks? Let me just put it into terms that everyone can understand. Higher debt means more money wasted on interest charges, okay? Already right now, every dollar you pay in federal sales tax goes to pay interest on the debt. Crazy. Now, Carney's debt binge will cost taxpayers about an extra $1 billion every single year on interest payments. What's $1 billion, folks? That is a brand new hospital. So Carney's debt binge, over and above the current debt problems we're facing, will essentially cost us a brand new hospital every single year.
That is just horrendous. I think we were in the middle of your book tour at the time, and it came out on a weekend. Yep. And I've been in the game a long time. I thought I was misreading this, like, for real, because the one thing that I think a lot of kind of casual listeners will kind of have an impression of Carney is, oh, he's a banker. He's a money guy. He'll be good with money. Like, he'll be fiscally responsible. No. Turns out the banker's worse with money than the drama teacher. Like, I couldn't believe that they put this costed platform out like this. You're absolutely right about the debt and the increasing cost of the debt interest payment. I will also point out that it's indicative, okay? It's indicative of government waste and just wanton government spending. Because we've just gone through the last 10 years or so of Prime Minister Justin Trudeau with crazy stories of government waste. Everything from airplane food to your favorite one of sex toy shows in Germany to big stuff like blowing money on that ArriveCan app that never worked. Like billions and billions of dollars out the door. And to me, apart from the huge increase in debt interest costs for people, is this is just an indicator of disrespect for taxpayers' money and that they're not going to bother. They're not going to bother trying to save money. He's like, here, hold my beer, Trudeau. I'm going to add more money to the debt than even you did. And so to me, this just shows that we're in for years and years of more big government wasteful spending. Okay, let's shift gears here to the Conservatives. What did you see there in their budget plan?
Yeah, well, look, you know, Polyev is not promising to balance the budget within his first mandate, right? So that's unfortunate. You know, to Polyev's credit, I'll say two things to Polyev's credit, though. Number one, Polyev's deficits are significantly lower than Carney's, right? Like significantly lower. So Polyev will be adding to the debt, but significantly less debt than Carney. You know, what we're hoping for is obviously a balanced budget by the end of the first mandate. I think that would have been more than doable. But, you know, on one point to Polyev's credit, he is adding significantly less debt than Carney or even than Trudeau. So, you know, there's some silver lining there. But I think where there's more credit to Polyev is that he's actually finding some savings. Right. And look, he's going to find about $3 billion of savings in the first year. That jumps up to about almost $10 billion in savings by the end of his mandate in his last year. But he's also identifying the specific places where he'll find savings, right? So that's good, right? So he's talked about consistently defunding the CBC. Defunding the CBC is in his platform. Okay, so that's good news. Ending the gun ban and buyback, right, which could end up soaking Canadians for like billions of dollars. The last internal records from the government expects that gun buyback at Boondoggle to be about a $2 billion hit to taxpayers. It's probably going to be more than that, right? If you look at history and the fact that its costs are always ballooning already. Polyev also talks about finding savings in the Crown corporations, right? We've been hammering Crown corporations that have been failing to do their job, yet still handing out big time bonuses. So again, good savings there. Another spot where we find some savings is in foreign aid, right? All the money being wasted overseas. Like I've mentioned this before, but in 2022, the last year where the government has provided records, the federal government spent $15.5 billion overseas in foreign aid, right? That's nearly three times more than what the federal government spent through the entire Department of Veterans Affairs. So you know what? Kudos to Polyev for going out there and saying he's going to stop wasting so much money overseas. I think that's good. You know, one area where I think all us Canadian taxpayers are going to have to push Polyev is to shrink the size of the bureaucracy. This is really where the big time savings have to come from. Because look, Trudeau added 108,000 extra bureaucrats. Okay, he ballooned the cost of the bureaucracy 73% in less than a decade. So what I'll say about Polyev's budget plan is that it's less debt than Carney's. There is some savings in there. So Polyev is promising to, you know, a good start to rein in the wasteful spending, but more work must be done.
I will also point out that he wants to severely cut back on the spending on consultants.
Yeah. Yep.
Which is a big one. You're there in, I'd like to tease you calling it Mordor. Of course, folks, he lives in downtown Ottawa.
Mordor.
Yeah, it is. Having lived there myself, I remember distinctly first arriving there when I was a kid and I was in my early 20s and I was from rural Western Canada. And my first impression after walking around downtown was, oh, this is where the money goes. That's what it feels like. And a big part of that wasteful spending, the money that goes into Ottawa, is on lobbyists. Anybody who walks around the downtown precinct, especially on, say, a Thursday or Friday night, you can almost hear the taxpayers' money sloshing around in that bathtub full of lobbyists and consultants and just so much money moving around there. I was really glad to see some savings being earmarked there. Part of his announcement was also the Taxpayer Protection Plan.
Now, which, yes.
Did you want to get into that? Because if I may, very quickly here, and I know you're Alberta director too, and you love Alberta as well. His mom lives around the corner from me. So if I may, as the Alberta director, the Taxpayer Protection Act here in Alberta, okay, is what has shielded us from a sales tax. Okay, so for folks who come in from Saskatchewan and BC to do their big shopping, we don't have a sales tax, and that's because we have a Taxpayer Protection Act, meaning if our government wanted to hit us with a new sales tax, they would have to win a referendum first. They would have to ask the people of Alberta for permission to increase their tax or create a new tax. Now I'm hearing Pierre Polyev saying, let's take that thing national. This is the first time I've heard this kind of direct democracy, this kind of real protection for taxpayers in a serious way since the Reform Party. What was your impression of this big promise?
Oh, Polyev's Taxpayer Protection Act is a game changer.
Yeah,
I actually think that is huge. You know, obviously the CTF, we've been trying to like push like just how big news this is, where Polyev is saying no new taxes, no tax hikes without a referendum first. I mean, that is huge, right? That is great news for ordinary Canadians who are fed up with these politicians and bureaucrats hiking our taxes, wasting our money. It's also great news for ordinary Canadians because it gives more power back to the people. Like, you know, especially on this book tour, one of the things that I heard from so many people is that they feel like they have a lack of control, a lack of accountability. So Polyev's Taxpayer Protection Act, great news for working Canadians, great news for us taxpayers. And it's horrible news for those money-hungry politicians, bureaucrats, and lobbyists who love tax hikes and wasting your money, right? So look, I think that's a great news. Like we've heard so many times in the past, whether it's provincial politicians or federal, where they during the election, they promise no new taxes. And once the election is over, what do they do right away? Well, they hike your taxes. So Polyev's Taxpayer Protection Act, I honestly think it's an absolute game changer. So throughout Polyev's platform, not only is he promising tax relief that will immediately make your life more affordable, but he's also promising this taxpayer protection, which will keep more money in your pockets for years to come, making it harder for the federal government to trick you and then take more of your money.
I always knew it was a good thing, but I especially knew that this was the right thing for him to announce because of the pearl clutching that was happening around Ottawa saying, oh my goodness, how on earth can the government function then and not be able just to raise your taxes on a whim? It's like, yeah, that's the point. You're giving power back to the people. So I thought that was excellent. Did we want to move to the economy? On the difference between these two parties' approaches to the economy and what's at stake here?
Yeah, let's wrap up that way. But hey, why don't you tackle Carney's platform first, and then I'll tackle Polyev's.
Love to. Okay, so as for, the economy is a big word, okay? And I'm actually speaking to an economist right now. Just don't tell him. So the economy, as far as Carney's approach goes, I'll take this from an Alberta perspective, okay? What Carney is promising to do, he's generally the same on capital gains tax increases, so I'll leave that for Franco. But the big one from a Western Canadian perspective, where the stuff is produced, things like oil and gas, okay, our nest eggs, okay, our golden goose, he wants to do many things. One, he wants to keep the cap on Alberta's energy. What that means is it's going to blow a $20 billion hole in the side of Canada's economy. These are not our numbers. This is the Parliamentary Budget Officer, okay? Came out with a report just at the beginning of the election saying, folks, this is a big problem. So Carney is going to say, hey, Alberta, hey, Saskatchewan, I'm going to continue to strangle your oil and gas sector, your energy sector. That, by estimations from the PBO, is going to cost $20 billion. And it's going to slash about 40,000 jobs. Okay. That is a really big deal. Okay. The other element is that he is on record. Carney is on record repeatedly. It is all through his book. Okay. That he wants to keep 80% of oil and gas in the ground. So in keeping with that view, he is supporting Bill C-69. Bill C-69, which the Canadian Taxpayers Federation fought in court, is otherwise known as the No More Pipelines Law. Premier Daniel Smith likes to call it the Don't Build Anything Anywhere Ever Law, because of course it affects more things than just pipelines. It includes things like quarries and mines and even bridge construction in some cases. So Carney has said out loud during this election, yep, he's going to keep that pipeline ban in place. So this is where it gets frustrating when he, as a politician, says things like, I'm going to make Canada an energy superpower. How? If you're going to keep this huge cap on Alberta's energy sector and you're going to keep the No More Pipelines Law on the books, what are you talking about? What I think he's talking about is actually wind and solar, because he says so repeatedly in his book. He thinks that 90% of the world's energy needs can be met within the next few years or so through wind and solar. So again, folks, the reason why I'm bringing this up is because it has a huge impact on our economy, on our jobs, on our cost of living, on our incomes, and frankly, on the bottom line for governments. Because to your point that we've talked about a lot, Franco, this cuts down on the amount of revenue that governments take in. if they're cutting off the oil and gas sector, they're not making as much money either.
And then where are they going to go looking for that extra money, especially with these massive debts and deficits, right? Well, they're going to go to ordinary people. And look, let's contrast all of that with Polyev's, let's call it economic part of his platform, because I actually think this is where Polyev is offering the most substantial benefits for Canadians. So let's contrast that right away, right? Get rid of the No More Pipelines laws, what Polyev is proposing, and the discriminatory tanker ban on the West Coast, and the gas and diesel ban, right? The Trudeau government has wanted to ban the sale of new gas and diesel vehicles by 2035. Well, Polyev is on the record very recently saying he would get rid of that. And now really to tie it into the taxpayer part, though, here's one of Polyev's most significant announcements. So Polyev is saying that he would defer all capital gains. So if you sell an asset, your business, if you're going to have to pay capital gains taxes, well, you can have that deferred if you reinvest that money into Canada's economy. Now, I actually think that's a huge move, a huge boost to Canada's economy, right? Being able to defer the capital gains tax if you reinvest in the Canadian economy, like, I think that's going to be really helpful to get Canada's economy firing in all cylinders. So the real wedge there, I think, is on Polyev's pro-growth platform, where he's going to make it easier for people to actually get stuff built, major natural resource projects here in Canada. And that's super important, right? Because since 2015, we have seen $670 billion, $670 billion in major natural resource projects stalled or canceled since 2015. So I think that looks like where Polyev's really trying to focus a lot of the work to actually build stuff here in Canada to make Canada's economy more resilient, which of course will create more jobs, attract investment, and help pay the government bills, right? Building more hospitals, reducing class sizes, fixing roads, more money then to reduce taxes as well. And then also just to add in that capital gains portion that Polyev is promising, where you will be able to defer the capital gains tax if you reinvest that money into the Canadian economy.
So explain that to me a little bit more on the reinvestment. So say I'm a producer, I produce something, I don't know, tires, okay? My factory makes tires. I feel like selling my business. If I sell that business, then are you saying I cannot have to pay capital gains taxes as long as I buy a new business and reinvest it in Canada? Is that the change here?
Yeah, that's essentially it. Like you're really deferring the capital gains, which is a capital gains tax, which encourages you then to just reinvest in the Canadian economy.
Well, that is a big difference. And that always blows my mind, that stat on the natural resources either canceled or stalled. And I'll give people a recent example, of course. People are probably familiar with the fight for a private company to be able to build a pipeline, their own pipeline, twin their own pipeline, spending their own money, okay, from Edmonton out to Burnaby, okay? This was a private company that wanted to do this. It got green lights for years and years and years, but then it slowly was strangled by foot dragging and regulation coming largely from the federal government. It got strangled so long and so hard that it eventually gave up and walked away from the project. The federal government solution to this was to step in and spend taxpayers' money to finish twinning this pipeline, which was astonishing. By the time the smoke clears on that one, folks, we're going to go from about $8 or $9 billion of private money being spent to close to $30 billion in taxpayers' money. So again, this isn't a good example of the strangulation that's happened with our natural resources sector. I also noticed, if I recall correctly, Pierre Polyev is promising what has long been promised by Western Canadian premiers, an energy corridor. So that's an east-west thing where they get pre-approval, okay, from First Nations folks who are buying into it, from environmentalists who are doing the testing, an east-west energy corridor. So then it'll be easier to get approval for things like power lines and pipelines, roadways, all that stuff, railways, through that geographic energy corridor. They also, if I recall correctly, talked about getting some form of pre-approval to basically speed up the approval process for things like mining. And apparently in Northern Ontario, that is a big deal where they have to wait years and years and years, and that scares away investment because no company around the world wants to sit around cooling their heels, spending millions of dollars or billions of dollars and not get any return on that. So I found that was a big difference between Pierre Poilievre's program and Carney's program as well.
Yeah, take us home, Chris.
All right. I did want to quickly point out what Franco touched on there, and that was the car ban. Okay. So what the current Liberal government is going to do is they are going to ban the sale of new gasoline and diesel powered vehicles, what most of us would call a normal car or truck. So the restrictions actually start kicking in soon. It's at some point next year. They start, you know, wheedling in a certain percentage that dealers will have to sell. But you're right, Franco, in 10 years' time, which is going to go by real fast, in 10 years' time, it will be against the law for you to go purchase a normal gasoline or diesel-powered car or truck. Now, if folks want to choose to drive a battery-powered vehicle, that's up to them. It should be up to them. But of course, the government's like, no, 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 let me step in here. So that robs them of that choice so that they can't pick a vehicle that suits their needs for both family and work. And here's the other catch, the cost. So the government itself, through the Natural Resources Department, has estimated that switching Canadian vehicle fleets over to electric is going to cost $300 billion. It's an astonishing amount of money. Now, for folks who are like, oh, well, how could it be so expensive? Folks, as of right now here in Alberta in wintertime, I get alerts on my phone to not plug in my hairdryer. I'm not kidding. That's how fragile our grid system is. That's how little energy we actually have in places like Alberta and Canada. Meaning, if we all suddenly start plugging in our vehicles, where's the electricity coming from? That's where this Natural Resources Department study steps in and says, yeah, it's going to cost us around $300 billion to build up nuclear or hydroelectric dams and all of the transmission lines and all the charging stations. So that vehicle ban, which is looming, which Carney agrees with, okay, and it's going to happen, it's not just that it takes away your choice of vehicle, it's a huge extra cost for taxpayers. Folks, we have so many articles about all of these topics with links and data and math and numbers, and you can go check it out for yourself. Franco, thank you so much for this great breakdown. You've been on top of all of these issues now for years, and I hope our viewers and listeners appreciate your insight here. Folks, head on over to our website, taxpayer.com. There's a ton of information there. And remember, head out on Monday and go vote.